by Proverbs chapter 1. Thankful to be back in the book of Proverbs and to kind of get into the body of the book here. We spent some time a month or two ago looking through Solomon and looking at his life, tracing his rise and fall, that he became powerful and a very strong and mighty king like none that had ever been before him or after him in Jerusalem. And then because of his love for 1,000 women and their love for false gods, his heart fell from the fear of the Lord. And we've examined the purpose of the book, that it is to teach us in wisdom and instruction, which is wisdom is the skill in righteousness, okay? And as we go through these first 9 chapters particularly, the first 9 chapters are separate from the rest of the book. So when we think of Proverbs, we often think of these short, pithy sayings, these little one-off sayings, and that is largely the contents of the second, or the, like the two-thirds of the book, that is chapters 10 through 29. And then in these first 9 chapters, we see something that's quite a bit different in style, very similar in content or instruction, what he's after. But in these first 9 chapters, it's more long-form lectures. So there are about 10 lectures in these first 9 chapters, with a few, 2 particularly, interludes. One of them will be next week, it's early. And then another one later on. These interludes from Lady Wisdom, and we'll look at Lady Wisdom next week. But for the most part, these are lectures from a father, which is Solomon taking this persona, to his son. So many of these lectures start with these very words, my son, and then he'll say something like, hear my instruction, and give a reason for him to hear his instruction. So the purpose of these is to have a longer training session, maybe. Sit down, my son, and listen to your father. So as we jump into this, we'll be taking them a little bit bigger pieces at a time. This one is, this first 9 chapters is a little bit easier to divide than when we go beyond it into chapters 10 through 29. 30 and 31 is relatively easy again. But these first 9 chapters, we'll see this morning lecture 1. The contents of lecture 1 are interesting. It seems if the first lesson from father to son is this, it's kind of an interesting one to choose. And I think it's revealing in part concerning the heart of sons. And it's a lesson against greed. It's a lesson against going after ill-gotten gain, money in a way that would exchange morality for this profit, okay? So the way that it's laid out is this very similar to many of the lectures. There's often an introductory admonition, and that's the, my son, listen, or my son, don't forsake something. My son, keep with you the instruction that you've heard, and then a motivating statement. So that's verses 8 and 9. In this case, he says, my son, hear the instruction of your father, and don't forsake the law of your mother, for, motivating statement, they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. So a few things that we'll talk about this time, and probably not every time as we go throughout, because this will, much like a Pauline greeting at the beginning of a letter, it becomes familiar. We know why he says grace and peace. And so here, we'll become more familiar with why he's saying some of the things he does. But first, let's ask the question, why the son? Why is Proverbs primarily written to the son? And there's a few reasons for this. But as you go through the book, it's almost exclusively written this way. Most of it is all father to son. So he views life through the lens of the young man. He encourages the young man toward the right kind of woman. He warns the young man against the wrong kind of woman. And throughout the book, he's not spending time warning the young woman against the wrong kind of man and encouraging her toward the right kind of man. Why this particular emphasis on the son? There's a few reasons for it. One of them is to build the poetry of the book. We'll see this come through very strongly beginning next week and going beyond, because wisdom, Solomon speaks of wisdom, this immaterial idea, as a woman, and a woman to be pursued. And so he naturally, in a poetic fashion, is calling his son to pursue this woman. So it becomes almost a dating and marriage story, the book of Proverbs does, and it encourages the young men towards that. So there's a poetic reason. There's also theological reasons. This is written from the mouth of the king. This is written from the mouth of the father of Israel. And so he is encouraging, as a leader and a ruler in the nation as well as his family, he is raising up and training the next generation of leaders, rulers, those who are going to guide in their homes, those who are going to have this responsibility of instruction. The mantle of responsibility is going to fall upon the son. And so the father calls him out. He specifically trains him. So what are the young women supposed to do as they listen to this? What about all of the moms in the assembly? What about everybody else? And right from the beginning, in lecture one, he starts out by saying, hear the instruction of your father and don't forsake the Torah of your mother. He places father and mother together as the instructors, as those who have the responsibility of pedagogy. So as an encouragement, as we go through this book, the perspectives of people listening. Yes, Solomon primarily is addressing the young people. And that's probably anywhere from like a 10-year-old to a 25-year-old is his primary audience. That's who he's supposed, that's who his voice is going towards, and everybody else is sort of sitting and listening around. And within that category of young people, it's particularly the young men. So there is these sort of concentric circles. Young men, listen to the book of Proverbs. It's particularly addressed to you for a reason. But all of us, because he doesn't say, Rehoboam, listen, right? It's not particular to one person. All of us join in as the son. Each of us sit under the teaching of the shepherd, whose words come from the shepherd, and we all listen together. So while there's concentric circles, the son, young people, everyone, we eventually all will take this sort of seat as the learners. So parents, this book is for you. We learn a lot about instructing and raising up a son from the words of the father to his son. But keep in mind, parents, that you're also the son. This is part of the path of the way of wisdom, is that as early as you can get on the path of wisdom, the better off you'll be. But then the longer you stay on the path of wisdom, like that's the intention of the road, is that you don't just walk on it while you're the son and then you sort of get off. You say, okay, well, now I'm the father. I have a different path. No, that's the same path. So even the men and the women, all the fathers and the mothers, all of them have, in this poetic sense, the role of son here in Proverbs. Tracking with that idea. So that's why he writes it to the son, for poetry and for theology and responsibility in the community. But he pairs together father and mother, and it's not a specific, it's not, he's not talking about, it's not Solomon and his wife, like teaching. It's the father and the mother. It's the ideal parents. And so there is also a bit of a word of warning. The text isn't telling all children to listen indiscriminately to their parents. It's subtle. It's a part of the text, but he's not just saying, so children, all follow what your father says. Hear the instruction of your dad, your literal dad, because is every dad like this ideal dad? Not at all. So dads, seek to be like this ideal father. Then as you are, children, listen to the voice of your father. So really he's calling us to listen to this dad. And then as our earthly fathers represent this dad, as they speak the same words, as they pass on the same inheritance, then we would earnestly listen to them as well. And I would say that for most, if not all, of the children in our assembly, you have a father who fears the Lord. So listen to your father. But I just want to call out that, that the text isn't just saying every child, listen to your father because he's giving you right instruction. So the call at the beginning is to hear and to not forsake. So a positive and a negative thing. Hearing is not just listening. In this case, hearing is moving toward obedience. The intent of this ear is to hear, to accept, to embrace, to assimilate these truths into my life, and to walk in them. That's the connotation of hear. So fully embrace it. Go all in. Again, whether you've tested it personally, thoroughly, or not is not the point. In fact, you're asked to embrace the truths of wisdom literature even before you personally have had the chance to test all of these things. Because in the testing of all these things, you become an old person. And in your age, then you probably will look back and say, yep, I have a story for that, I have a story for that, I have a story for that. And you say, I would have been better off if I had just embraced that at the beginning. So that's the call for the young people, to go all in as far as the wisdom literature is concerned. So hear the instruction of dad. Instruction is a key word in the text. We'll talk about it quite a bit more as we go along. It's a key word in parenting. But it can have both verbal and corporal connotations. In Proverbs, the idea is that early and often it's verbal, and then when the verbal warning, the instruction, is ineffective, then there may be some sort of corporal means of assisting in remembrance. That's what instruction is. It's normally these two things together. So that's the instruction of dad. And then he says the instruction of mom, the law of your mother, and that's the word Torah. Now, when we think Torah, my mind initially goes back to the first five books. That goes back to Moses. In this case, and throughout the book of Proverbs, there's no definite article before Torah, so it's not the Torah, it's Torah, which is broader. It's the instruction, it is the teaching, it is the law, it is the right way of your mom. This is, in this case, synonymous with instruction of dad. They're saying the same things. They have the same voice. And the voice of the ideal parents is mirroring the voice of our Father, the one shepherd. So it's the voice of God through the voice of the ideal parents to the Son, which is, in concentric circles, all of us. So hear, and then don't forsake. Give your ear, give your heart, give your life, and then keep giving your ear, your heart, your life. Don't undo what was done early. Don't question later down the road, or not that questions won't come, but don't ultimately walk away. Don't forsake this. Don't let it fall by the wayside. Be renewed. Learn from Solomon, who eventually, in some way, at least in his habit, forsook the law. He ceased to fear God. Okay? So that's the admonition. Do this. Hear and don't forsake your parents, these ideal parents. Why? Because, here's our motivation, because they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. And you can already start to see the parallelism that's going to be all throughout, beautifully woven through Proverbs. Parallelism is these repetitive lines of Hebrew poetry. So you have, my son, hear instruction of father. Don't forsake law of mother. Two beautiful lines that say complementing things or building an idea. For reason, they will be garland on your head, chains on your neck. You could just see it's all flowing very beautifully. And look for parallelism as we go through this book. What is the they in the text? What is a garland around my neck? What are, chains about my neck or garland on my head? What is that? What's the they? And importantly, in this text, we'll see it, the lecture sort of have this inclusio idea, this beginning and end, these bookends, in the idea that the teaching and the Torah, the instruction, that is a beautiful crown on the head of the one who's listening. That is beautiful beads or a necklace around the person who's listening. The one who chooses to hear and to not forsake is adorned by the instruction. So we should start to think of the book and the writings in this book almost as nouns that we would interact with. These objects, they're representing the ideas. But as I hear the voice of my Father, what's being built is this beautiful crown of victory or of power or of life or of social prestige or of wisdom that I'm living well. Like, look, this thing has adorned me. I'm winning is kind of the idea. Doing well as we embrace them. So think of them as objects that make one, not in a selfish or an arrogant way, but it does make someone look good, does make someone live well. There's a lot of positive connotations with the idea of embracing these ideas. So honor, attractiveness, victory or vindication, power and life, guidance and protection. This is somebody who has things together in the covenant community sense. They're living well. They're skilled in righteousness. And so there's some of the motivation is that as this, keep in mind the son is sort of being trained as a leader, as a ruler. So think of old leaders or rulers. There would be these signs or symbols of their authority or their power, perhaps something on their head, perhaps something around their neck or a pendant. That's the idea. You're growing into the leadership responsibility. Which is helpful in part because it's easy when you grow up in a covenant community at times to think of the maybe core tenets of the community as a bit the opposite. Maybe as something that might be a bit embarrassing, something that I might not want to wear publicly, something that's like, yeah, I'll just kind of keep that to myself, or I'm not sure what I think about that. I'm not sure if I'm all in on these ideas. And Solomon's calling us to do the opposite. He's saying, wear it with pride. Wear the instruction of your father and the Torah of your mother. There's the admonition and motivation. So what is the body of lesson one? Where does he go from there? And here's the proposition in verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, the old King James, consent thou not. Don't go with them. Don't consent. Isn't it sort of classic that lesson one starts with a prohibition from dad? Sons, daughters, doesn't it often feel like the parenting is just so negative around here? They're just always telling me what not to do. It feels so restrictive. So I think it's almost humorous that the first lesson starts with, now here's one thing you shouldn't do. Because that's very classic parenting. Even good parenting can be filled with many prohibitions. So he says, if sinners entice you, do not consent. One of the things we'll see very clearly as we move through the book is that there's four main voices, four main characters who are all calling for the attention of the young people. So one of them is the father, and then one of them is this man. Now it's plural in our text. As we go through Proverbs, he's kind of reduced to one individual, the leader perhaps of this group of people. So there's a dad and another man. Dad is calling towards righteousness in the way of life, in the way of wisdom. This other man is calling toward unrighteousness and the way of death and folly. So which one will you hear? Which one will you follow? Then there, in addition to these two men, there are two women. We'll meet Lady Wisdom next week and then Lady Folly following that. But there's two women, one in each camp as well. And what are they both doing? They are both calling for the attention of the young people, particularly the son. They're calling them to follow them. They're calling them to give them their lives. They're promising them spoils. So the question is then, which woman will you follow? Which voice will you listen to? And significantly, in the book of Proverbs, as well as the whole of Scripture, there are only two options. There aren't three, four, five, six paths. There are two paths. One of them is very broad. One of them is very wide and has countless voices inside it. And one of them is narrow. And it is straight. And it is established. And it is ancient. And it has a singular voice in it. So this is the question. And we'll establish this a little bit more next week as Lady Wisdom begins calling particularly to one kind of young person. But the question is, where are these young people going to go? What voices are they going to listen to? Who will they follow? And that's a question for the young people today. Where are you going? Which voices have weight? Which voices have authority? This is calling the people. The son is really this person who's older than young and younger than old. They're not children. They're not babies. They don't just need told what to do all the time, but they're also not on their own. They're not independent. It's this person who knows some things, but doesn't know as much as they think they know. It's the person who is now interested in people of the opposite sex. But it's also maybe not, or it's right about time. It's time to begin considering, time to begin conversations. Let's make moves and let's move towards someone and make a wise choice. You can see like it's this transition from adolescence into adulthood. That's who he's primarily calling. So, hear father and mother, have these things adorn you. When other people call, when the other voice, when the other camp, when the other path calls, when the sinners entice you, don't go with them. Don't walk their path. And then, once again, in sort of a classic parenting move, dad's imagination gets going and he paints a scenario. He tells a story. It's not a real story, but it is a real story. It didn't actually happen, but it could happen. So here he goes in verses 11 through 14, and he actually plays a character. He becomes the voice. He becomes the sinner that he's calling his son not to listen to. He's like, all right, here's how it's going to go. He's going to come to you, and this is what he's going to say. If he says, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us have one purse. Okay, Dad. It's a bit of a dramatic story, isn't it? He's literally saying, okay, so when you are about to get recruited into the gang, when he comes to you and he like has his gun out and he's doing his thing and he's like, hey, come with me, kid. We're going to go and we're going to like pull people over and we're going to make them give us all of their money and then we're going to kill them and then we're going to throw them in the ditch and then we're going to make all this money. Come with me. Don't go with that guy. Thanks, Dad. Like, okay. And the son, in some regard, is like, well, no, duh. All of us are, like, we're going to do that. I'm not doing that. Haven't you had that maybe conversation with your parents where you're like, okay, well, I know you're saying not to do this, but at least I did this, or I wouldn't go as far as you think that I would go, or at least I'm not doing X, Y, Z. Like, this is that X, Y, Z. This is about as far as it goes. Most of us, quite naturally, are not going to become cold-blooded murderers. That's who this person is. That's what this gang is doing. So we'll come back to this at the end, but we would be wrong, young people, would be wrong to just reduce it to that idea. Like he gets to the moral at the end of the story. There's more than just not joining the gang. It's bigger than that. So don't reduce it and just check it off. Well, lecture one, I'm not a gang member. Lecture two, let's go. He's pauses here. So that's the voice. Now, who are these people? What are they doing? It's an invitation toward personal gain at the expense of one's morals. This sinner, this crazy uncle, this gang leader is calling on his nephew, on the boy, on the young man who's impressionable. And he says, you know, your dad, he's got his like ways. I have a better way. And I could make you rich. Now, there's some questionable things along the path. Maybe he acknowledges, maybe he doesn't. But we have our own code. We still have our own morality. And I want you to come with me. It's really not that bad. All right, here we go. And what the nature of their activities, they're kind of secretive. This is verse 11. They're the people who waylaid the traveler that the Good Samaritan helped. These are the people who are on the path to Jericho, and it's a treacherous path, and you know the bad guys are out there, so the bad guys may as well be out there. It's like we're just doing what everybody expects for there to be. So let's just lie secretly here. And it's a big problem in the covenant community that they would be affecting or attacking the innocent without a reason. When you think back to the law of God for Israel, this is a massive problem, because this is the exchange of God's way for the way of men. This is not just. This is not righteous. This is not equitable. It is not fair. It is not generous or kind. It's not even the lowest measure of fulfilling the law. They're taking people who have done nothing wrong, but that are easy to take advantage of. So we'll see this throughout Proverbs as well. There's this idea of trusting one's neighbor that we all want to do in an ideal world, but don't know that we can. And in a community of faith, in a world, the proverbial world, where this family is following Yahweh and they're seeking to uphold his commands, they should be able to trust their neighbor. They do trust their neighbor. And so for someone to lie in wait around the corner and to waylay their neighbor, that's a serious offense. You're destroying the community of faith. And their activity is very violent, swallowing them alive like Sheol, whole like those who go down to the pit. This idea of life and wholeness are probably painting the picture of someone that comes along the path in their vitality, in their youth. It's not like an old person where you can maybe make a horrible argument that it's okay to go ahead and attack them. They've lived their life, right? They've had a full path, and now their money's just sitting there. It's like it's asking for us. No, this is like, these are people who are working. They are in the middle of life. They are raising children. That's kind of the image. In order to create a supreme offense is sort of the idea. And they become, Sheol and the pit are these pictures of death. So they are the escorters to the grave. We'll show you the way and we'll take everything you leave behind. In 13 and 14, there's another parallel line. This is the second half of what the leader says. Says, here's really the benefit. Here's why the offer is enticing. It's not just violence for violence's sake. There's precious possessions to be had. All kinds of them. In fact, we fill our houses. Houses may be a little clue that these aren't like outlying people. These are people who live amongst everybody else. They have homes in the community. And they're just full, secretly, almost like the Zacchaeus, where they're full of other people's stuff. They're full of other people's money. He's living well off of his neighbor, whether his neighbor even knows or not. So they find all of this benefit, these precious possessions. And that too, almost everything here early, you will see again and again and again and again as we go through. And very importantly, everybody has something to offer. Everybody has a reason you should follow them. Everybody has an enticing reason that you should follow them. Riches, quick, and a lot of them, that's enticing. Tell me your story. Tell me the way. Tell me how we get there. Tell me the means to that end. So whether it's the dad and the mom, I mean, offering in this case a graceful garland and chains about their neck, or it's the bad guy who's offering a house full of spoils, or whether it's Lady Wisdom who will offer her spoils, or it's Lady Folly who will offer her spoils, everybody is making an offer to the young people. And we're very well aware of that idea. It's part of what keeps parents up at night with their teens. Where are they going to go? Who are they going to be? Will they follow the path? Will they leave the path? These are the questions that kind of trouble parents, even the good ones. They're wondering, they're watching, they're Proverbs-ing. So that's the call. And at the end, there's this sort of twisted morality where the guy says, cast in your lot among us, let us all have one purse. So there's maybe a twisted morality, this code, like the Pirate's Code type of an idea. Like, we do have rules, and the rule is everybody throws everything in and then we have equal spoils. But then just like every good story or every movie would show, can you really trust the guy who's making you that offer that you get an equal cut? So he says, here are the rules. Here's how we're going to live. This is going to be your spoils. If the son follows him, will he really get that? No. He'd be lucky if he lives, right? So that's the offer. And it's enticing for a few reasons. One, it shows that there is camaraderie and community in verse 14. There's also great benefit. There's spoils. There's riches. Certainly young men, if not all of us, we want that. There's something appealing about that, about the security and the joy of a house full of money. So there are things about it that are like alluring, and that's exactly it. If sinners allure you, if they entice you, if they give you this offer that seems hard to pass up, don't do it. He's going to elaborate now in 15 through 18 on why. So this is his initial warning in verse 10. If they entice you, don't go. Why? Let me elaborate. Let me explain the end of this path. I'm going to sort of undress the offer so that it no longer looks like what it looked like before. Here's two pairs of verses from the dad now resuming his voice. He says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil and they make haste to shed blood. So there's a picture of what the son's not supposed to do, which is even to just put one foot in that way. Keep your foot altogether out of it. Again, don't test it. That's so hard for a young man not to do, for young people not to do. You mean trust you completely? I kind of want to, just a little, like let me push the line a little. So he says, don't put your foot at all in that road. When you do, why not? Because on that road, there is a mass of people who are stampeding down that road. Their feet are running toward evil, and they are making haste to shed blood. They are all in. They're after this. Whether they would even say that they're running down the path of wickedness or not, the dad, this ideal father, is identifying that that's what they're doing. He says, when you put your foot out there, what may happen? You may get swept along with them. You may find yourself in a few months way further down the path of wickedness than you ever imagined you could be because you put a foot out there. Trust me, don't. Stay over here. Stay on this side. Don't walk in the way with them. Don't give your ear to them. Hear me. And it sounds so like protective, and it sounds so like, I just want you to do what I want you to do. But if your physical parents are walking in the fear of God and they mirror this voice, young people, do well to hear them. Do well to not forsake the instruction and Torah of your parents. So one, he's calling it immoral. Their feet are hastily running to shed blood. Then, and I enjoy this part greatly, 17 and 18, Proverbs does this a lot. It sort of doesn't pull maybe some punches that other parts in Scripture do, because it calls a lot of things stupid. And I kind of like that. It's fun. So he says, they're not walking wisely. They're stupid. Why? 17 and 18. He says, he gives this picture, a metaphor. Surely, in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So he says, hunter, here's the image, trapper, fowler, someone who is after the animal. He says, how about this? Why don't you walk up to the flock of birds, and why don't you put your net out there right in front of them while they're watching you, and then walk away and see what happens? Why don't you, while the birds are flying through the air, make your presence known, then throw the net up into the air and see if any of these masterfully winged escapers fly into it? They're not going to. They're not that stupid. But the sinner is that stupid. That's his point. He says, nobody tells the animal, I'm about to shoot. Better watch out. Right? Nobody does that. That's a dumb hunter. But he says here, they do that to themselves. They set out the trap in front of them, and then they jump into it. They're like, well, that was fun. Look, we just trapped ourselves. We just shot ourselves in the foot. What a good time we've been having. And then he says, in the end of it, so they are lying in wait for their blood. No, you're lying in wait for your blood. We're going to steal their treasure. No, you're going to lose all of your treasure. This is not a good long-term investment, right? You took the short, greedy, right now, today, live large, live high. Here we go. Take from them. Look, it's working. No consequences. And at the end of the day, you die. You have nothing. You lose, and you lose eternally. He's like making fun of them. Now, he's not making fun of death and hell, but he's trying to show his son how dumb that path is, how unwise that path is. Remember, there's only two. And so the option at the end of their path, as the wise parent knows, is that they're done. They lose their life. Perhaps physically, as many gang members have, and spiritually, they would lose their lives. That's the moral of the story in verse 19. So are the ways of everyone who joins the gang and kills innocent people. Now you see the lesson expanded. You see the lesson applied. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. That just got a little bit broader. The idea in the text is that it's not that they want money. Okay? Proverbs has many positive things to say about going and getting money and how you should do it. And there's few things worse in Proverbs than the lazy man, the someone who won't work, someone who won't provide. That's a very important virtue in the life of somebody in the covenant community, particularly one of the sons. That's something that's very important. So he's not condemning that. He's saying you're looking for an extra cut. You're looking for a shortcut. You're looking to take advantage of someone else and take what they have lawfully earned. You're exchanging morality for money. That is a dangerous exchange. So, young people, as you think about career, as you think about the path toward establishing your future family, as you think about wise money moves, which are good things for you to consider right now, be very, very careful about the person who tells you, let me show you the way to get ahead. Let me show you the shortcut. Let me show you this thing that all these other fools won't realize, that all these other people who are living their life and doing what humanity's done for many years, which is sort of this honest day's work, honest day's pay. And I'm going to show you how to undo all of that and fill your house tomorrow. That should be like major warning signs for the young person. Be willing to be patient, okay? And then remember back at the beginning how the teaching in the Torah, the instruction in the Torah, they are like a graceful garland and like a necklace. So there are these nouns, these things. Well, now the greed is also a noun. And it's a deadly weapon. It's something that when you hold it to yourself, when you have this treasure, it's like the fire, and it consumes you. So it says, it, the greed, the greedy gain, the ill-got gain, that kills you. So don't take it. Don't go after it at all. So there's the moral of the story. So, application. How do we think through this? Parents, first, as we go through, I just want you to kind of have in your minds that Proverbs throughout the whole thing, it's not going to explicitly say, parents, here's how you parent. Doesn't really do that. It just, we watch the father, we watch the mother, and they talk and they instruct, so we learn well from them, okay? So what are some of the things that the father has done in chapter one, in lecture one, that we could learn from? One is that the father and mother are a team. Right? You have one voice, and that's really important, that you would be on the same page as you're instructing your children, that the children know if you've asked mom, it's like you've asked dad. If you've asked dad, it's like you've asked mom. And you want to be probably having private conversations before you come out of the room and you say, here's the way, here's what we're doing, here's where we're going. You want to seek to be on the same page so you have one voice and the kids aren't, as they will do, seeking to pit you against each other. Secondly, you are intended to anticipate danger. Culturally, religiously, spiritually, practically, and physically, anticipate the danger. You have lived longer than your children. You know, even in some of your own stories, the certain persuasiveness of the world, the rhetoric that drew you in ways that you would not have anticipated beforehand. You've seen some of these things. You know that the appeal, when they get it, will be attractive, even though it shouldn't be. And so what you're seeking to do here is to match that persuasive rhetoric with a vivid image of your own. Paint the picture. Tell them the story. Show them how it goes. Is it dramatic? Yeah, it's really dramatic. Here, he goes about as far as you can go in the story, which has its own dangers, right? The non-insightful son or daughter will not be able to hear verse 19. They won't be able to hear for the parable, for the story, because it was too big. It was too grand. They're like, well, that was just ridiculous. So, okay, but tell the story and use your imagination. Don't fear the dramatic. Keep in mind, though, that while we are seeking to raise up our children and help them listen and hear the parable and even do some interpreting and thinking of the parable on their own, it may be helpful for you to interpret it for them. He told a story, then he interpreted the story. Haven't we experienced the helpfulness of that when Jesus did that to the disciples in the Gospels? Like, we could all sit with the uninterpreted parables and have sort of thoughts and wars and interesting conversations about them. But when he says, and this is that, and this is that, and this is that, we're like, whew, thank you. That was very helpful. Now I understand specifically what you were saying. So interpret the parables. And at the end, there's a clear moral principle. That may be helpful as well. That at the end of the day, you sort of say, and here is exactly what I'm saying. If you chase ill-got gain, you will die. That's what I'm trying to say. And he did that in verse 19. I think it's also helpful for us to remember, parents, that we should live by example so that the voice of the parents is most naturally effective when it's consistent with the life lived. So, as best as possible, don't live a life that's easy to pick apart from the message that you're speaking, and teach your children that there are many moments in your life that are incompatible with the lesson that you're teaching, and show them then how to reconcile those things. Show them how to walk before God in the fear of God, even when you've sinned, even when you've done actions that were, look, I put my foot in the path, and I should not have done that. So teach them with humility. By example. Okay, so those are a few thoughts for parents. How about for the children, those followers of the way, those who are supposed to be hearing and not forsaking? It is ultimately in your best interest to hear. The parents aren't just trying to do something for themselves. Now, are their motives mixed? Probably. It's really hard not to be. Do parents want well-behaved children who are out there doing things that sort of make them look good too? Yeah, they do. But at the end of the day, their heart, the heart of the father and mother, is for your soul. It's for your life now and forever. And if you see the end of the two paths, that one leads to glory and one to destruction, then they're calling on these things for you. So it's in your best interest to hear. If you don't want to die alone by the side of the road, is the dramatic picture, then listen. As we noted as we went through it, the instruction might feel heavy on the negatives. Live with it, forgive it, expect it a little bit, that's okay. So hear through it sometimes. Is it easier for parents to be critical rather than positive? Yeah, probably so. So hear that even in the voice of the ideal father and mother, he starts with a negative. Okay, sometimes it's very easy to just shut a door and say, don't go in there, than it is to explain all the reasons why it's better to be out here. Your instruction may feel heavy on the negatives. Think of the teaching as the physical treasure and the adornments. It's just a helpful poetic thing. There's going to be a lot of these like mindset games almost that you play through Proverbs that are helpful. The biggest one being Lady Wisdom. We'll see that beginning next week. And then don't miss the moral for the drama. So young people, it's really difficult for you in your stage of life as a general rule to hear beyond the things that are difficult to get over. So as an illustration, like the professor at school that just is sort of disheveled or they have a weird voice and you can't hear what they're saying because their voice is just so crazy. And so then you just go talk about their voice to your friends or you just tune them out because it's annoying or they have these little weird tics or whatever it might be. Okay, so then what do you lose? Everything the teacher ever said. Whoops. That was immature. That was not wise. That was filled with youth and folly. Characteristic of your age. So the goal is to live above, like sort of hit above your pay grade, you know, like to hit above your weight, to do that. So seek to learn to listen to what somebody's intending to say. Get to the heart of what they mean, rather than just hanging on to all of the things that might distract you from what they're really saying. That's difficult to do. It's difficult for adults to do too. But don't miss the moral for the drama. Story, well, I'd never do that. If you think the lesson begins and ends with don't kill people for money, then you've reduced the teaching. Most, hopefully all of us will pass that test. We're all wise according to that metric. So really lean into verse 19, the expansion. This trap, I think, is what he's describing is the deadly outcome of all who are greedy, not just the gang members who plan violence. So then a little further application for the young people than all of us. What are some illustrations? What are some examples of this? Of ways that we could be greedy for gain. So we've talked a little bit about career and the path that you choose to get there. The boss who comes to you say, hey, will you maybe write something here that's not true so that this works well in the system or you get this sort of reward? Or just write down a different number than actually was. Okay, warning signs, warning bells. Like, well, everybody does it. It's just kind of how we do things. Okay, so will you exchange integrity for advancement? Something to consider, probably not wise. Those in school, the idea of if you're homeschooling, then maybe your siblings. If you're in school, then your classmates. This idea of bullying or the idea of preying on the vulnerable, making fun, like taking easy shots at people, that's doing a similar thing to what this gang is doing. They're lying in wait and they're shedding blood. They're just cutting indiscriminately. They're just moving, they're wounding, and they don't care. It's fun. It's a game. They get some laughs. They get some money at the end of it. Don't do that. Don't walk the path of the bully. And this is more of a general idea than using your power to take advantage of other people. Ripping somebody off in your business dealings, embezzling, certainly, there's easy illustration. Even if somebody would let you, or even if somebody has no idea that it happened, you're still not intended to take advantage, right? So there's a variety of principles. Muse on it. Think about in your life how the principle of morality for money or morality for gain, be like getting a little bit ahead faster than I perhaps should. Think and consider this week how that applies. So there's the moral. There's parents and hearers. Then we have the theological. What do we learn about God from this text? Well, one, God cares about how you get your money. It's not just a thing about life and then we go to church and do the church things. This is a way that God has a vested interest in the manner in which people get to the end. And he has guidelines and rules. He also, this is important, unstated in the text but certainly true, God cares about those who have been stolen from. We probably, at some point in our lives, both been on both sides of that, having something taken from us and perhaps taking something from someone else. So God cares about both situations in different ways. Then what is his path? Well, he requires contentment and hard work. This is the way towards the end being providing for family. The way, God's way towards that end is contentment and hard work and knowing that he has promised to provide. So as the psalmist says, never have I seen the righteous begging bread. Like at the end of the day, God has promised to provide for his people, and the natural means he's encouraged us to follow is to work hard and to get an honest day's wage. So there's some theological things. God certainly cares about lecture one. It's from him, and it's an important one for the young people. Then we have this Christological application. As we think forward in the redemptive story toward Jesus. Well, one, and we'll see this all the time, Proverbs, Jesus didn't do that. Jesus didn't join the game. Thank you, Jesus, for your life of obedience. Thank you for your righteousness. Thank you for living well in every moment and for never exchanging morality for money. He never took advantage of anyone. He cared for the people who did get taken advantage of. And as a maybe final illustration of this before we close, think of Matthew chapter 4, where not this exact, but a very similar offer was made to him. The sinner did come to him. And the sinner said, look at all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. Look at everything I could offer you. And he offered him more than an even split. He offered him the whole thing, the whole bag. He could have all of it. And the devil said to him, all these things I will give you if. And that's what we should watch for, is the if. If you will fall down and worship me. Just a little thing you just need to do. And then you can have everything. If you'll fall down and worship me. And Jesus says to him, away with you, Satan. For it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. And in so doing, Jesus demonstrated the fulfillment of all righteousness. For he was not allured with ill-gotten gain. And he said no to the king of sinners, to the ultimate gang leader. And he showed the son how he's intended to live. So this is lecture one. It's been an encouragement to you. Pray that God will bless you with these truths and that we will walk the path of wisdom ultimately toward physical and eternal life. Let's pray before we sing our next song.